And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this is the Labor Day weekend. You'd hardly know it. One thing you do know is that last week, in the run-up to Labor Day, Trump announced that federal workers in a whole series of federal agencies, in a whole series of cabinet departments, he said would no longer be allowed to belong to unions, could no longer have the right to bargain about their job situation collectively, and that the union offices in the various departments had 5 days to pack up and get out of the building. These people were protected by contract. These unions didn't, they're not squatters. This is legal, contractual, and at least five generations old. That's a hell of a way to celebrate Labor Day.
Yeah, it's especially to reward the unions for having many of their members vote for him.
Yeah.
But he's always...
Well, he didn't do it to the unions that endorsed him. The Border Patrol, the border officers, they can continue to bargain collectively. But the government employees unions, they can't bargain collectively.
Yeah. And this goes to the ongoing weakness of the labor movement, that previous presidents wouldn't even have attempted this years ago because of what would have occurred throughout the union. You know, there would have been a solidarity of unions rising up. But I didn't
even hear anybody say anything about it.
I didn't either. And these, you know, and this is part of the problem writ large with Trump, and it's a divide and a conquer strategy. He keeps coming up with a whole host of things. Every day, there's something new. There's the, you know, the Daily Show on this really keeps everybody off balance.
Well, I want to get back to that in a minute. That's a very important point. But I just wanted to, before we got off this business with the unions, yeah, I want to point out that it was the union movement and the social movements surrounding the union movement 100 years ago that led to the creation of Social Security, the welfare system, public housing. Everything that we regard as bedrock social safety net came about because of the pressure organized by the unions, which they exerted on the political establishment to force them to pass these laws, which didn't exist before.
It's bigger than that when you look at collectively. It created the middle class.
It's true, too. That's right. It did.
It created and preserved the middle class.
Yeah.
Which lasted until the middle of the 1970s.
Yes, that's right.
When things started to erode. But that was the high watermark of union participation among workers.
Downhill ever since. Ever since. In regarding the interaction between the union movement and the political establishment, there's a famous anecdote of a meeting that Franklin Roosevelt had with the leader, one of the important leaders of the union movements at that time. And they were pressing for something. It's irrelevant what he was pressing for. And Roosevelt said to this union leader, "Sidney, you've convinced me. Now go out and force me to do it." That's how it happened. That's how it worked. When you wipe out the unions, you guarantee a massive increase in inequality, a massive increase in joblessness, in homelessness, in bad health care. It follows like the day follows the night and the night follows the day.
And I mean, our economic situation is somewhat different than it was when we were more of a manufacturing and industrialized country, but still there are workers that can be collectively gathered into a movement. Just because you're now working at other kinds of jobs doesn't mean you can't do better for yourself.
White collar workers are in movement, union movements, yeah, all over the world.
Yeah.
But now they're talking about computerization in the form of artificial intelligence wiping out the lower ranks of white collar workers. That could happen. So you'll have the increasing capitalization of the industrial plant of the, and the increasing laying off and making unnecessary numbers of workers. Who's going to buy this stuff? How's that going to happen?
Yeah, that's the old story with the president of GM and Walter Reuther going through the plant. And I mean, we've told that story. I've told that story a number of times. You've told your story about Roosevelt a number of times.
Yeah.
You know, talking about all the robots that are now being more efficient, and Reuther turning to the president of GM said, "And not one of those robots is ever going to buy a GM car."
Exactly. Exactly. The economy does not, I mean, the people are not born to serve the economy. The economy was invented to serve the people. That's how, and if you forget that, you've forgotten what life is. You made it up stories about what life is. You're leading some kind of fantasy world that's going to come, you know, make you very poor when you wake up.
But when you impoverish people and make them desperate, then it becomes every man and woman for themselves. And that's
then you lose.
Yes. And that's one of the things that Ruth Ben-Ghiat talks about when she talks about autocrats. It's not you and me against the autocrat. It's the autocrat has turned you against me and me against you. And it's a survival mode type of thing, where your perceived enemy is the person next door instead of the autocrat.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So
in other words, the fact that the garment industry moved to Bangladesh and China was not caused by Mexican garment workers or Jewish garment workers or black garment workers. It was caused by whoever owned the garment factories, who figured out that they could make more profit producing in Bangladesh and in China than producing in New York or Scranton or Alabama.
Yeah.
And they moved as quickly as they could.
Yeah.
But who are we fighting? Who are we told to fight? Garment workers are told to fight garment workers. Well, there are no garment workers, but if there were, these immigrants are taking your jobs. They're not taking your jobs. The job disappeared because you didn't have a union that could prevent the employer from moving the production to Bangladesh. You want to increase wages? Organize unions. You want to make sure that low-paid that immigrants are not forced into low-paid jobs? Bring them into unions and make sure that everyone gets the union wage.
And this is the contributing factor to the economic inequality that we've talked about ad nauseum, where the CEOs make hundreds of times more than the average worker does in their business.
Yeah.
And that wage gap, it causes resentment. It causes unrest, so to speak. But it still keeps people away from organized resistance to those things. And we've celebrated this, you know, this great wealth accumulation, where they keep people thinking that everybody can become a multi-billionaire, which isn't true.
No, it's of course not true.
No, but what have you? But that's so. I mean, this Labor Day, there's not a lot that we have right now to celebrate in terms of labor.
No. And that brings us back to the point that I interrupted you when you was trying to make it about the fact that the Trump people are constantly throwing up new distractions and it's hard to figure out what to do.
This
Well,
is
I think that they're throwing up the distractions is intended to keep their opposition off balance, and the opposition is making a very big mistake if they let themselves fall into that trap.
This is something that I saw Donny Deutsch point out this week, but we've kind of known that he said that the problem with the Democrats is that they have to organize around a central message or a central idea. And there are plenty of things that they can organize around. The fiasco that's going around with the CDC, all these other things that are happening, and instead, every day Trump comes out with a new thing that calls for some sort of response, but it takes you off message, and it dilutes any message you have because now you're talking about not just message but these other things. It's the Steve Bannon idea of the fire hose effect. Hit them with everything all at once and continue to do
Well, that doesn't work unless you let it work. What the job of a political leadership is to figure out what are the main issues that the people confront, whether they realize it or they don't realize it. If they don't realize it, the task of political leadership is to get them to realize it one way or the other. If the people already do realize it, then the task is to concentrate on that. Organize around that, build the largest possible coalition based on that, and get rid of the enemy. That's the task of leadership. If the Democratic Party is not organized to do that, or can't get organized to do that, or refuses to do that, they cannot effectively stand up against the Republicans because the Republicans are able to do what they want to do. They are able to make sure that the people they represent are getting what they want, which is the large owners of corporations, the mega billionaires who control the information economy, the racists who want their ideology, strengthened and protected, the obscurantists who hate science and want religion to replace science. That's who they represent, and they are giving them what they want, what they need. You want to beat that? You got to figure out some set of things that people really need and are prepared to unite around and stick to that. Don't worry about the other crap. The fact is, with Bobby Kennedy running the health system, the people are menaced in their lives. They're menaced in their health. Their children are menaced. Their old people are menaced. There's no one who isn't menaced. Your life expectancy is being cut. It's demonstrable. And the life that you lead is going to be a life of sickness. The food that you eat is going to be poisoned. The air that you breathe is going to be polluted. The water will have to be boiled. It's happening. Stick to that. Stick to that. Let the Trump people do all they want about something else. Stick to that. And if you don't think that's right, find something like that and stick to that and use it. You'll win. That's how strategy works. You pick the issues that you feel, based on your analysis, based on who you want to serve, that this is what's needed, and you stick to that.
One of
Otherwise,
the,
you're running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
well, one of the things is that Trump does things or promotes things that people can see at that time. Okay, some of it's nonsense, like we want toilets that flush better, or we want shower heads that have more power behind them. Those kind of things. And he comes up with all these little things that involve things that people see in their daily lives that that are a little irksome, but his policies do things that have more long-term effects that people don't see. They're not seeing.
That's right. He's telling you to worry about the water coming out of your shower head at the same time that Arizona is losing all its water.
Right. Or that the pollution, you know, that it's becoming more polluted in your water. Your air is becoming more polluted type of things.
Yeah.
And Bill Maher really puts his finger on it. You know, Trump has the pulse of people, in their daily lives rather than in their long-term interests that are going to make their lives and their children's lives better. The things that Trump's doing that aren't going to improve their children's or grandchildren's lives, but they're not going to be around to see it, or they can't see that. You know, the people really only see things that are in front of them.
Yeah, but what people can't see that's in front of them is that their parents are sick, or their family members are sick, or their best friends are sick, and there's no help. That's in front of people's eyes. That's why that's an issue that should be used. Because there's no way that the reactionaries can solve that problem. They caused the problem. They deepened the problem. They can't. They have no way to solve the problem. Taking health insurance away from people doesn't improve anybody's health.
No, but it makes them desperate, and it makes them more docile. Instead of, you need someone to fire them up and to coordinate that.
That's right. I mean, but guess what? Nurses unions, healthcare unions, doctors associations, they have the ability to go among the people and say, look, this is what's needed. Let's get this done. And if political party, that electoral party that backs that, that stance that says, this is what we'll do, that is going to, we already know that that achieves a great amount of success.
Sure. It's a hospital workers union. Becomes ineffective if the hospital's closed.
It's exactly right. There's no union if there's no hospital. That's right.
Yeah, and once it closes, they ain't coming back.
That's right.
They ain't coming back.
And you may say that, well, the rural areas are bastions of reaction. The rural areas are also hospital deserts, healthcare deserts, and filled with illness, and where you have 40, 50, 60% of the people on Medicaid, depending on or Veterans Administration help. They are ripe for responding properly in their own interests and against the Republicans who right now dominate their consciousness.
But the Trump people have found a way to get people to believe in them, you know, that make America healthy again.
Yeah, I understand that, but it's all based on lies. You
know, yeah, and Trump is also a master of defining a problem, but coming up with the wrong solution. And the fact that he defines the problem captures the attention of people and their willingness to look towards him for the solution, because he's the one that's defined the problem. The other guy isn't even talking about it. So,
so that the Democrats, if they're the opposition, if they're the leaders of the opposition, if they want to be the leaders of the opposition, better figure out a way to define the problem and organize behind the definition, and not just moan.
Right. And of course, the Democrats have decided that the way to do this is to win elections. But they're looking at it in the traditional sense. And Donald Trump and the Republicans are looking at it how we can rig elections or avoid elections altogether.
But that's a very important point, because we've come to a big crisis. We're in the midst of if we saw it in any other country, you'd say there's a coup going on there.
Yeah.
Right? They've neutered the legislative. They've neutered the judiciary. That's a coup. Too bad for those people. They're going to have to figure out some way to overcome that their whole system of politics has been turned upside down. You have the form of politics, but not the reality of politics. You have the form of democracy, maybe, but not the reality. There's nothing that's going to... spent $50 billion, he allocated $50 billion to create a private police force, which he wants to send into Democratic cities. Do you think that's in order to help Democrats run elections?
Well, that's the Ruth Ben Gviat idea that you have the form but not the substance of a democracy. And there are people who are wise to this who are saying, you know, this is a precursor, that they're not going to allow elections to happen, or at least in big cities. They're going to nationalize the guard to go into the Chicagos and to be on the streets on election day, where they're going to intimidate people not to come out to the polls. And
well, how about declaring a national emergency and saying, because of the horrible conditions in Chicago, we have to postpone the election?
Yeah, I mean, Trump is already hinting about that.
Yeah,
can we have a national election when there's a war going on or something?
Yeah.
Of course, and nobody points out to him, well, we did it during the Civil War. We had interim elections during World War I, even though we weren't in it at the time in 1916. We had national elections in 1944 during World War II. We had national elections during the Korean War in 1952. We had national elections during the Vietnam War, you know, in 1968 and 1972. Yeah, we can have these elections. And
those were real national emergencies, not the ones that he invents.
Right.
Because don't forget, there are no such national emergencies such as he claims exist.
Right.
There is no invasion of America by Mexican immigrants. It doesn't happen. It hasn't happened. It can't happen. It isn't happening. There's no Venezuelan gang that's taken over the cities of America. It hasn't happened. But that's what is the predicate. That's the excuse for sending the troops into the cities.
Well, and that gets back to what I said last week when I said what the mayor of D.C. should have said in preemption of Trump, all the things that he's going to do that are not needed or justified, but are just merely emanations of his rhetorical bloviations,
yeah,
so to speak.
Pritzker did it in Illinois. He did it.
Newsom's doing it.
Yeah.
But
it shouldn't be up to this guy.
It's going to come down, unfortunately, to whether or not the Supreme Court allows him to do these things. Up to now, they've allowed him to do most of it.
Well, they'll allow him. They're going to allow him. Yes, they're going to allow him. That's why you have to have a movement, a citizens' movement, not just an electoral movement, not just one that depends for whether or not it can win by how many seats can get elected in a gerrymandered and rigged electoral system. You've got to organize people to be able to take action in the streets so that even when the government officials want to do something, they can't do it. That's where we are.
Yeah.
When you're successful in neutering the electoral process, you force politics into the street. That's what they've done. If the Democrats can't respond in the streets, they are done as a political leadership force.
Well, we're going to have to see what happens here in the 8th Congressional District. The 7th and the 8th, the 7th being Lehigh Valley and the 8th being Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area generally, have been labeled as two of the most highly contested and evenly divided congressional districts in the country, two of the top 10. And our current my current congressman, Rob Bresnahan, who only won by a point and a half during a Trump wave election, has been doing basically everything he can to undermine his reelectability. The question is who the Democrats are going to put up against him. And
he's been a reliable Trump supporter, right? He's voted.
Yeah,
for,
yeah. He was going to protect Medicare, and then he voted for the beautiful big bill.
Yeah.
He wants to get rid of congressional stock trading, but he's been making huge amounts of money on doing that.
And said, "What would I do with my money if I didn't do it?"
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the answer to that is leave Congress and become a stock trader.
Exactly.
Then you don't have to have the distractions of making laws that hurt the rest of the people in your district.
Precisely.
That's the answer. That's the answer.
That's the answer. Right.
But who's going to do it? And right now, it's come down to, a couple of people. There were three or four names mentioned. Paige Cognetti, the mayor of Scranton, who's running for re-election and did very well in the primary. Bridget Malloy-Kozorowski, my state representative, who is pretty popular and has won a number of elections. Mike Lombardo, the mayor of Pittston. And Pittston, as a city under him, has revitalized to some extent. And there's an assistant or former assistant DA down in Wilkes-Barre, I think his name is McLaughlin, who was looking at it but didn't seem to put anything together. And right now, there's been a back and forth, mostly concentrating on the two women, Cognetti and Kozorowski. And it looks like now, from people I've talked to, that it's only going to be Mayor Cognetti that's going to run. And so the Democrats are going to have, whoever it was, the Democrats wanted to avoid a primary fight. They wanted to be able to rally around a single person. Cognetti has proven to be fairly popular. However, she does have enemies out there, mostly through the municipal unions and some other people who she's managed to insult or alienate personally. But in general, her image is pretty good, and the city of Scranton looks good. However, she's got to be careful on her reelection.
She's not corrupt personally, which the previous mayor was.
Bill Courtright. She's not in it for that personal corruption type, personal aggrandizement, right? But and neither is Bridget Kozorowski. But the fact is that she won the primary very easily. The Republicans were split and really don't have a strong candidate. They have a woman candidate now. But there's an independent there, Jean Barrett, who's part of, I think, the old Good Old Boy Network, who avoided a primary by registering independent, who's found an issue. And that issue is, why vote for the mayor in 2025 if she's going to run for Congress and not be your mayor in 2026? And that's a good point for him. And, Mayor Cognetti had a political difficulty there because she had to gather her assets and try to raise money if she wants a congressional campaign. But on the other hand, she didn't want to, detract from her reelect campaign. Whether she's going to be able to do that or not, we'll have to see. It's been a quiet campaign so far. If the Republicans are smart, they're going to put a lot of backing behind Jean Barrett, but they do have a Republican candidate, and we'll see what they do. They want to, rough Cognetti up in the mayoral race in order to make it more difficult for her in the congressional race against Rob Bresnahan. So we have
The main thing that I know that Cognetti needs is an organization, which I don't think she has, because she's never really been part of the Democratic machine. She doesn't really pay much attention to the Democratic Party organization. She came to power and got elected against them. And I don't know of anything that she's done to organize a district-wide coterie following, much less an organization.
Yeah, her campaign staff was bare bones. She didn't have a lot of money. One of the persons running it has already left for a different job down in Luzerne County. So we'll have to see how that sticks.
The congressional, this district is geographically very wide.
Yeah.
It's because it's mainly rural, and rural counties are low population. So it requires an enormous expenditure just getting around.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to do. Well, anyway, we'll see. This is Labor Day.
Okay. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.